Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
May is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the 21CD podcast. As always, I am your ghost, John. We've got quite a show for you here today. This is definitely going to end up being one of my darker shows to date because, you know, with all this talk about the Epstein files and all this kind of stuff, I've started to see a lot of people coming out of the woodwork and saying that the most heinous of emails are probably not projecting truth. They're probably made up as some kind of joke by these predators who are sending the emails to one another. They're just idiots who are, you know, saying stuff that they think is funny that isn't really funny, and nothing that they're actually saying is actually rooted in the truth of the actions that they're actually committing. In other words, they're not actually doing what they're saying they're doing in the emails. Stuff like that. Saying that there's no possible way that they would be or could be even committing these types of heinous acts, preying upon children, sex trafficking, kidnapping, all of this kind of stuff, torturing, mutilation, cannibalism, all of the nasty things that you've been seeing, I'm sure, over the course of the past week or two. And this is kind of disturbing because to me, what this proves is that humanity is not ready to accept the evil of their ways. They don't understand how or why men could commit such evil. And therefore, they prefer to believe that it must be fake. And of course, there's a ton of people who believe that it is real and that it is actually happening and that it did actually happen. But the amount of people that have said there's no possible way that the elite could be doing this type of stuff and this is all being blown out of proportion is staggering. And I would like to clarify that this disbelief is mainly spoken about. This disbelief is projected from mouths who are in the West, so namely first world countries, people who have been born within the last couple hundred years in first world countries who just don't really have any basis for the way they perceive mankind, the way they perceive humanity. They think everything is in a first world Western sort of they view the whole world from a first world Western perspective. But as somebody who travels a lot and as somebody who has been to third world countries and as somebody who has seen evil firsthand, I can tell you that this stuff is, in other parts of the world, it is not as shocking or surprising as it may seem to first world Westerners. This kind of stuff has been happening for centuries. This is nothing new. It's just new to all these kids who are now seeing the possibility that it's their leaders doing it for the first time. But if you go to Africa, if you go to South America, if you go to any of these countries, some Far Eastern countries, if you go to these countries and you take a look at some of these evil people who are in these realms, these other parts of the world, you will see that evil only needs space to flourish in order to do so, and that these people from other parts of the world have been victims of this kind of stuff for centuries. And I think that it's been going on a lot longer in the West than we like to admit, and that this is not necessarily a first world or third world sin. It is a sin that evil men engage in, the trafficking, the victimization of children, taking advantage of the young and the helpless. These are things that evil men do all over the world, and it doesn't matter what type of civilization you're in, whether you're in some African tribe out in the middle of nowhere, Congo, or you're in the state of Minnesota in the USA or Washington, D.C., okay? It doesn't really matter. Evil only needs space to flourish in order to do so. And there has been, in recent years, plenty of space in the USA for evil to flourish. But why do cults terrorize and kill children? Like, why would they not go and just abduct full-grown people or something like that? Which they do. We'll get into that. But why specifically children? And when researching this topic, I of course came across the statistic that is true, that hundreds of thousands of children in the United States alone are victims of trafficking every single year. And I wanted to ask the question, why? Why do you think that is? Why is it hundreds of thousands? Why is it not just hundreds of hundreds, right? Why is it hundreds of thousands of children? And exact figures, of course, just like the people who go missing in the national parks, are hard to pinpoint due to reporting differences, statistical analysis, all this kind of stuff that, you know, that kind of stuff varies. And so therefore the exact number of missing people also varies. But the United States often reports the highest absolute numbers of missing children annually in the entire world, reaching nearly 500,000 annually. The highest of all the countries in the world? Our beloved, shining, democratic example of what it means to be first world and what it means to have the privileges therein is the number one child trafficking country in the world? Now, or at least missing persons, at least missing children's cases are more pronounced here than anywhere else in the world. But it does go without saying, of course, that not all missing children become victims of cults. And it also goes without saying, I will add, that cults are responsible for many missing children. So I think what we need to do, what we need to definitively do is define a cult. And first, I'll remind you guys, if you like this kind of conversation, if you like this kind of stuff, if you like cryptids, creepy crawlies, conspiracies, all this kind of stuff, please shoot me a follow, a like, or a share. Hit me with those hype points or that 5-star rating. If you want some merch or to tell me about your own experiences, you can go ahead and do that at 21cdstudios.com. Thank you very much. You guys keep the show alive by supporting. Now, a cult is a group that centers around a shared devotion to a person, to a belief, or an ideology. And these groups often require intense devotion and loyalty, and they use manipulation and control to basically enforce and maintain power. So recognizing the signs that make something a cult can absolutely help people better recognize when a group crosses the line. Cults are usually headed by a powerful leader who isolates members from the rest of society, and experts suggest that this course of control distinguishes these groups, not necessarily their connection to specific faiths, religions, or belief systems, okay? The Epstein Circle, for instance, was and is most definitely a cult, mainly because there was some sort of coercive control. Epstein was most definitely collecting blackmail materials on basically all the world leaders, right? Now, that all begs the question, why do powerful people join cults? And why are those cults typically evil? Why is it not simply being taken advantage by somebody powerful? Why is it not somebody like you or me who is regularly recruited into a cult instead of these powerful people who joined Epstein? And the answer is, well, regular people are recruited into cults all of the time. But when it comes to powerful people, there are more benefits to joining something like the Epstein cult. Powerful individuals often join cults because they seek some kind of deeper meaning to life. They seek exclusive knowledge, some type of circle that can provide them with some sort of benefit. They seek a sense of community that their status cannot provide, because if they go out onto the streets, they will be assassinated. And so they must seek a higher community, a community of people who occupy a different level of civilization. And they may be lured by promises or higher enlightenment, greater influence, or an escape from intense high-stakes pressure. But despite their external success, they are often susceptible still to emotional vulnerability or charismatic manipulation, especially if the benefits are magnificent. After all, they are only human. So some key reasons for this behavior include some kind of search for purpose and meaning. Powerful people often seek a deeper or a higher purpose to complement their worldly achievements. After all, what they do on Earth eventually becomes boring when you can do whatever you want, right? So they need to find some sort of higher purpose or meaning, and usually that dips toes into the spirituality aspect of being a human. Cults also revolve around a leader who claims special access to certain wisdom, certain power, or enlightenment, and that is very enticing to powerful people. There's also emotional vulnerability, as we said. Despite their status, these people are still people, and so they may experience moments of weakness, like personal crisis or loneliness, making them vulnerable to love bombing or validation or the appeal of a group that supports each other. If there are promises of greater control or influence, that is also very enticing. Some cults promise to accelerate success or offer secrets to maintaining power. In groups like the Epstein Circle, they would buy each other's debt, which would mean that they virtually had a fail-proof existence. They could do whatever they wanted, and even if their ventures didn't succeed, one of their other members of this cult would buy their debt and they would be able to go on business as usual. Whereas somebody like you or me, if we invested millions of dollars into a company or a project and it failed, we would be broken for the rest of our lives. They are able to bail each other out constantly, and of course that is very appealing. You want to maintain your role of power instead of surrendering it when you fail at something, right? High-powered jobs can be very isolating too. Cults offer a tight-knit, albeit controlled, community that can end up feeling like a family, especially if the members of the cult are exposed to each other's sins and evils. That makes this group very, like I said, tight-knit, very connected in a way that transcends your normal human-to-human connection. They know all of the evils about each other, therefore they are more connected. And then cults, they use sophisticated indoctrination methods, such as controlling information and using fear or guilt, blackmailing, and all of this can influence absolutely anybody, regardless of their status. So in the case of the global elite, the predatory class, as I've begun to call them, there is a greater mission, I think, though. And one question that I've been asking myself lately is, if they're willing to tell us about all of this evil on the news all of a sudden, and they're going to let every YouTuber and podcaster under the sun start to discuss all this stuff openly, all of their sins openly, what could possibly be more evil than this, right? What could be worse than what we're seeing now? And the fact of the matter is, there literally may not be anything worse than what they're doing now, especially if even a fraction of the emails that we're reading are true. But what is certain is that satanic cults that prey upon children do not merely do it because they have some taboo desire toward vulnerable youth. It's not merely just pedophile taboos and stuff like that. There is a certain spiritual drawing to these activities. And we could argue that the thing that is more evil than what they're showing us is the absolutely horrifying scale of what they're doing. In other words, we assume there are anywhere from 35, which has been verified, to 1,000 Epstein victims. And yet, the number of missing children in the U.S. alone is 500,000 annually. And that's just children, okay? Adults are abducted too, and we haven't even begun to discuss all the other countries in which people go missing. In Europe, in the East, in the South, in Africa, all this kind of stuff. We haven't even begun to discuss all of those other countries. We haven't begun to discuss the Native American tribes and the vast amount of women who go missing from them either, right? We've only seen the tip of the iceberg as far as scale goes. But beneath the surface, yes, it merely looks like 35 to 1,000 victims.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And yet, that number most likely grows to millions, because what we're seeing with the Epstein circle is just a teeny tiny little itty bitty pinhead to the evil. It just so happens that it's a bunch of the global elite, the people who run your stock market, who determine whether you have a job, who determine what you get paid, whether you get health care. And so that is the catastrophe. But this is still only a mere fraction of the evil that is present on the face of the planet of this type, okay? So if this is the case, the entire world then is sort of enveloped in this gigantic blood cult, and anybody at any moment could become a victim of it. As Tim Dillon said on his show, who cares if they're stealing our children? Who cares if they're abducting our kids and sacrificing them to Baal? Who cares? The Dow is up. The Dow is up. The S&P 500. The everything is going great in the economy. Who cares if they abduct your children and eat them? But if you do care, then at a minimum, what we're seeing here is that we are not the free people that we think we are. That freedom is a lie. And at a minimum, the horrors and evils discussed in the Bible become verified and validated. Okay? What exactly do these satanic cults do to children? And what is the purpose? What are they hoping to achieve by destroying the lives of children? Many times literally, like actually sacrificing them, killing them, etc. This is a difficult topic to research, not only because of the horrible things that you have to witness in the process of doing it, but also because you have to wade through the muck and the murk of what is true and what is tall tale. And so everything that I'm telling you is essentially verified experiences from people who were in satanic cults of one style or another, who took advantage of children or were children taken advantage of in satanic cults. And I had to heavily censor this stuff. So what you're about to hear is highly, highly troubling regardless. And if you are sensitive to this type of stuff, if you were in a satanic sex cult at one point, if you have been a victim and cannot stomach it, I advise you not to listen to this. That being said, as I just declared, I did censor it slightly so that the brunt of it has been softened, but it is still troubling just because of the nature of what it is. I referred heavily to the research of Lloyd DeMause, who was an American psychoanalyst and a social historian, and he did an incredible deep dive with a number of his colleagues on what exactly satanic cults, or cults with supposedly something bizarre to gain, believe when it comes to children and why they do what they do to children. And the reason, like I said, that I'm even releasing this episode is because there's this massive movement to say that everything in the files is fake, that these evil things could not possibly have been done, that all of these famous people that we're supposed to love and trust aren't actually doing what the emails say they're doing, and it must have all just been some giant funny joke that these horrible people who are in power and control our lives and dictate what we get paid and what healthcare we get and what happens next and whether we live or die. It must all just be a giant joke that they were, you know, playing with each other in the situation that inevitably the emails get found. They would have something to look back on and laugh at because, ha ha, we tricked them. They actually think we're satanic. Ha 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 ha. But this is exactly how they keep people in a state of manipulation and disbelief. Hence why I'm doing this research. Hence why I'm making this episode. It's not because I get any pleasure out of any of this. The things mentioned in the emails, though, have been done thousands, if not millions of times by people throughout history. Therefore, the emails are not only not speaking anything new into the world, but they're not even that hard to believe if you actually understand cults of a satanic nature and the evils that men in these groups, especially men of power who have experienced every pleasure under the sun and are basically in a perpetual state of boredom and are constantly seeking something new to excite them, can engage in. Okay? But once again, warning, this content is troubling. Here we go. It was only after DeMause did his own research on the history and psychotherapy of cult abuse of children that he began to piece together what cults actually do and what their motivations actually are. Case studies written by psychotherapists working with children who have recently become victims of cults or adults who have convincing and detailed memories of having been abused as children by groups are plentiful. Okay, they're plentiful enough that if one wants to find them, they will. You just have to know where to look. Particularly revealing are those containing reports by children who were recently abused by cults, since they contain details that are often missing from memories of cult abuse by adults. Children remember this stuff much easier than adults do because it happened to them much more recent in time by the time they bear witness, right? These children have just been through the abuse. They don't have to depend upon memories which might be distorted, right? So questions about whether memories of drinking blood are real or not are soon settled after hearing the children tell of the recent events, like the one that one particular 8-year-old reported. When Miss Ellis put the knife in and the blood came out, she caught it in a cup and we had to drink it. It was warm. It was sort of oily tasting, kind of like if you take a sip of salad oil or something. A memory that a child had been hung by a noose by a cult becomes more believable when you find out that the child later was found practicing hanging himself. This is another thing. A lot of these children who were victims end up returning to what they experienced when they were a victim. Actually being victimized. Stories of torture and sacrifice also gain credibility when you hear the voices of the children tell about their recent experiences. Claims that cults mutilate and kill people become more real when one hears a child tell her caseworker, "Dad is fast with the knife. It was disgusting. When these people were killed, we had to help take those knives and plunge them into the other people too. It was disgusting. Of course I was scared. We had to do it, or Mom would kill us." and your doubts about details of the sacrificial ritual are dissolved after reading accounts such as the following, which was reported by this child's therapist. Tell me what is frightening you. And then the child says, I don't want to kill the baby. I don't want to kill the baby. He went on and on like this, clutching a little teddy bear and sobbing, I am in a cage. There are men there, men with horns. The men form a circle. They hold hands and dance. They chant over and over again, Hail Satan, we are servants of Satan. Hail Satan. Then they take me out of the cage, pick up this silver cup, and empty it over me. It has blood in it. It feels sticky. The leader gets out of the chair and pours more blood on a baby lying on the table. He takes a long knife and puts it in my hands and says, We offer this child to Satan as a sacrifice. May Satan's will be done. May Satan accept this sacrifice. He holds my hands on the knife, raises it up, and plunges it into the baby's chest, and the blood spurts up. And what we're seeing here is something that looks a lot like spirit cooking, as brought to Hollywood for entertainment for people as sick as Lady Gaga, and who now is a witch of her own, and also is mainly done by Mila Abramovich, who is one of the Hollywood elite witches. These people, they love to take bodies of human beings and cover them in blood and then mimic eating them with all of their Hollywood buddies. It's very strange stuff. They take spoons and they scoop the blood off of the bodies that are sort of submerged in it. Kind of like what we're seeing in these satanic rituals that these children report being part of. Then the leader takes the knife out of my hand. He reaches into the chest and pulls out something. I think it's the heart. He cuts off a piece of it, eats it, and gives pieces to the other men and me. He made me eat it. Then they place me on my back in the center of the circle. They take my clothes off and rub oil on my body. The women come over. They do all sorts of horrible things. I am ashamed. Then I was taken into the next room. My mother and father were there. They washed me. They gave me clean clothes and took me home. Now, after reading over 100 descriptions of what cults, both contemporary and historical, do to children, the first conclusion that DeMoz came to was that they all do pretty much the same things, okay? They weren't following a worldwide conspiracy. Most of them were just your neighborhood sadist torturing kids for pleasure. People who never read a book on Satanism in their entire lives. Yet they all spontaneously followed this ritual whose elements and even details are exactly the same. They take little children, they tie them up, they put them in cages, in tunnels, they beat and torture them, they turn them upside down, they hold them in water, they cut, they stab, they do foul sexual things to them. They force them to eat feces and drink urine and blood, and disembowel, dismember, and kill others, and sometimes those things happen to them as too, all while the people who are doing this are getting off to it. They seem to be acting out a very specific drama, but what could such a bizarre collection of acts actually mean? Why are they doing this beyond just some sort of sexual satisfaction? Cult abuse, like all sadistic acts, individual or group, is a sexual perversion whose purpose is achieving gratification by means of a defense against severe fears of disintegration and engulfment. According to Sicarides, Charles William, who was an American psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, physician, he was an educator and an author, and he focused much of his career on homosexuality, which he believed could be altered. He said that sadistic release is achieved by inflicting upon a scapegoat childhood traumas, particularly proverbial experiences with a frightening, cruel, or neglectful mother, inflicting rather passively enduring pain and destruction. Sadists essentially live their daily lives full of terrible anxieties about being independent and active. Any success in their lives is terribly fearful, producing regression to infancy and a desire to merge with mommy. But merging means losing oneself, being annihilated. To avoid this, it is necessary to inflict on someone else all of the traumas one has had, plus all of the fantasies of revenge against the persecuting parents. Only by reenacting cultic rituals can these deeply regressed individuals avoid castration and engulfment fears and reassure themselves of their potency and separateness. Groups are particularly effective in achieving this traumatic reenactment, of course, because groups sort of amp each other up. The individual identifies with the aggressor, and the group and its leader become the murderous, engulfing mommy torturing the child. Actual castration is often inflicted on victims by cults. It is also sometimes inflicted upon cult members, who will sometimes even cut off their own body parts and offer them to Satan to make them more potent, or make the leader of the cult more potent. And the leader of the cult, of course, looks out for them, right? It was considered an honor among Satanists to have one or more fingers missing for this reason, for instance, says a cult member. Sometimes the phallus or the finger is actually eaten, an act very effective, allegedly, in restoring potency. The same principle lies behind all cannibalistic acts of cults. In fact, the cultic rituals eventually aim at the restoration of lost potency. So when you sacrifice someone for the instant just before they die, for instance, they supposedly emit their life energy. Let me say that again. When you sacrifice someone just before they die, they supposedly emit their life energy. That power, Satanists believe, and you could say Satanists, you could say anybody who is supposedly trying to benefit from this, they are all from the cult of Satan, okay? I'm not literally speaking about satanic, like people from the satanic church or whatever. I'm just saying people who engage in satanic cult rituals, okay?
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
That power, that life energy that is emitted upon the death of somebody the moment they die, can be harnessed for their use. They believe babies are best because babies are pure. So when you sacrifice a baby, you get greater power than if you sacrificed an adult. Of course, that doesn't stop them from doing both. The psychodynamics of the full cultic ritual is clear. It is the same as with all sadist torture and killing of children. First, the sadist terrorizes the child to increase his or her fear, his or her power. This is the concept of adrenochrome, right? And then watching the child grow in panic and agony in order to see the sadist's own fear that then gets injected into another. Then he does foul sexual things to him or her at the moment that he stabs him or her with a knife, so he can have that
redacted
at the point of death of the child and absorb all of the power. You guys see what is going on here? I'm not going to read it again, but that is the full circle. That is the ritual. This delusional absorption of children's power has been the central group fantasy behind all child sacrifice since the days when early civilizations sacrificed children to prevent the world from descending into chaos, i.e. to prevent the individuals and the society from feeling feelings of annihilation. This same fantasy of restoration of potency through sexually abusing, torturing, and killing children also underlies the acts of the pedophiles and sadists that were treated by some of these other therapists that we were talking about. So ubiquitous is the use of this defensive mechanism of group identification with the aggressor that I now believe that cultic activity began with early man. Not only do children's footprints appear in early caves, such as like actually tunnels like those beneath McMartin that Roland Summit writes about in his articles. More on that in a second. But pictures of shamans and other Paleolithic men with erections appear frequently on the walls of these caves, showing that the rituals performed there were also sexually exciting. In other words, this sort of thing is ancient. It is not a new thing that Epstein and his cronies thought up. This is a constant ritual that is being performed by powerful people all throughout time. Even back when they were living in caves, they would go into caves and make cave paintings. At the times that they did that, they were still doing what Epstein and his cronies are doing today. There are also figurines that are mistakenly called Venuses, and batons often found in caves that are actually sexual abuse instruments called devil's wands. That's what the cults call them today. Even the cut-off fingers of cult members are shown in the hundreds of handprints with missing fingers that are outlined in red ochre all around the caves. And the McMartin case, for those who don't know, the McMartin preschool child abuse case began in 1983 in Manhattan Beach, California, and is one of the most visible cases in history. But two trials were conducted and no convictions were obtained. Some individuals continue to believe that dozens of children were sexually abused at the preschool. In 1990, an archaeologist was hired to determine whether tunnels had existed under the school because some of the children had alleged that some of their abuse took place in tunnels under the building, and sure enough, tunnels were found down there. But again, nobody was really punished for this because the people in power are less likely to punish for these type of things because it enforces their power in a weird way. It's like when you see somebody, it's like when veterans see one another, right? It's kind of like this bond that these elite have with the people who are practicing the same activities that they're practicing on a smaller level. And who knows, they may be able to help each other in some ways. That's why so many of these cases end up with nobody being punished for anything. So, it's horrible, but it is the truth. They are akin to one another, and therefore they are not always so eager to disrupt each other's rituals. Now, the psychodynamics of cultic torture and sacrifice of children are the same, whether performed, like we said before, by these small contemporary groups or by whole countries in the past. They involve the following steps. 1, regression due to fears of individuation. 2, trance states and dissociative mechanisms such as assumption of multiple personalities by cult members. 3, merging with the leader as a defense against engulfment by internal figures using projective identification to relieve them of intolerable feelings. 4, defecation of the terrifying leader as a defense against personal helplessness. 5, organization of cult hierarchy into totalitarian structure in order to carry out the 6th element, which is torture and sacrificial rebirth rituals that reenact childhood and fetal traumas, recapitulating the drama of absolute power over absolute helplessness. And that is a critical component. That number 6, torture and sacrificial rebirth rituals that reenact childhood and fetal traumas, recapitulating the drama of absolute power over absolute helplessness. For those who are unacquainted with Demaz's work, upon which I have been, pulling from here, he did some work on fetal memory and the reenactment of fetal trauma, and it may seem arbitrary and excessive to claim, but cultic ritual involves regression all the way back to birth. Yet, I think this is the only way to make sense out of the specific elements of certain cult rituals. Cults relive each traumatic moment of birth in their rituals. They put children in cages, they put them in boxes and coffins, and these are all symbolic of wombs. They hang them upside down, which is the position of fetuses. They plunge children into water, they push their heads into toilets, and otherwise reenact the experience of being in amniotic fluids and the anoxia that all fetuses feel during birth, okay? They drink victims' blood as fetuses drink placental blood. They force children to drink urine as fetuses do in the womb and eat feces as some do during birth. They often hold their rituals in actual tunnels, and it's because they are symbolic of birth canals or within magical symbols that represent wombs or birth canals. In fact, every one of the 16 elements that cult researchers such as John Goodwin and David Finkelhor have regularly found in cult rituals are symbolic reenactments of birth traumas. Without birth as the Rosetta Stone of cult ritual, these acts absolutely make no sense. Why would you make sexual abuse so complicated? Researchers have asked this question when they discuss the details of costume and sequencing of sadistic acts and cultic ritual. Remember seeing all the, I don't know if you guys saw all those photos in the Epstein files of people in costumes, but this is why. The answer is because the sequence of acts reproduce a very specific fetal drama that must be recapitulated. Cults often even kill actual fetuses in their ritual. In addition, death and rebirth elements are overtly made part of these rituals. Cults of the past usually proclaimed the group would be reborn through the sacrifice of children, and contemporary cults go through death ritually in graveyards, with rebirth elements such as members going through the legs of others in order to be reborn, okay? And there's various different ways that cults do these rebirth rituals, but one ritual described in the literature involves the victim going into a trance, naked and bound, and being carried into a cave by a group of naked women, then going through their legs while the women swayed, howled, and screamed as though in childbirth, cutting umbilical bonds and being sprinkled with water. One of these individuals who engaged in one of these rebirth rituals recalled it and reported as follows, that a small baby was first cut and its blood rubbed on her. She was then put next to the dead baby, and then the baby was put between her legs and stabbed with a cross, rubbing the mess all over her, as though the dead baby's blood had some kind of power in it. Then she was painted with red stuff and made to stick her head between a woman's legs. And with my head stuck between her legs, she made me crawl out. She breathed into my mouth and my nose. She also told about another ritual that started with her upside down inside a devil statue made out of plaster and covered with blood. She said she felt like toothpaste in a tube as she was squeezed out of this statue. I'm being born. I have something thick wrapped around my neck. A man is cutting that cord around my neck so it doesn't choke me to death. He says he is giving life to me. More graphic reenactments of birth could not really be imagined than this. Once the psychodynamics of cultic ritual are truly understood, one can begin to see how these same cultic psychodynamics explain the acts of other regressed groups, including the ritual of war. Although the torture, the dismemberment, and the death elements of war are indeed generally thought of as mere means to other ends, which usually are territorial or economic, any of the reasons you would go to war, DeMoz was kind of unable to find any group that decided to go to war purely for utilitarian reasons. The usual emotional atmosphere involved in the decision to go to war is shown by how the Japanese leadership decided to attack Pearl Harbor. They first asked each minister to tell what would happen if they attacked the U.S. Each one forecast, of course, eventual defeat. But by the time he went around the table, it was obvious an attack would be suicidal for Japan. So Tojo said, "There are times when we must have the courage to do extraordinary things, like jumping with eyes closed off the veranda of the Kiyomizu Temple." And this was the place where people committed suicide in Tokyo. Hitler also, by the way, spoke of suicidal images as he went to war. Each of the six elements of cult ritual that we talked about earlier are sort of reenacted in war. War, in a way, provides the death and rebirth of a nation, right? Again, this is another reason that these individuals are engaging in this satanic rebirth ritual as they do, and how it relates to war. And I'm not necessarily going to name any names, but tribes and nations regress during pre-war periods, and they sort of fear individuation, claiming that progress and prosperity makes the nation soft, okay, and turns men into women. It makes them wimps and robs them of their potency. Then they go into a trance and they use dissociation to deny any empathy for the enemies that they are about to slaughter. Gaza comes to mind. Okay? This is how individuals are able to engage in genocide. By these sort of beliefs. But they're not only doing this on a global scale. They're doing this on an individual level in little satanic cults as well. Prior to going to war, this is all, it's like the Bohemian Grove when you go there to sort of lay off your cares for what you're feeling toward, you know, like how did they describe it? I don't remember exactly, but the Bohemian Grove is where the elite go to lay down their cares before the owl, right? It's that same type of process. These elite, they go through this satanic death rebirth ritual to prepare them for moments where they will inflict that upon entire nations, okay? I will give it to you that it is less apparent that war, like cultic ritual, is a sexual perversion. That's not the easiest thing to come to the realization of. But cults,
redacted.
They torture, they kill with the aim of...
redacted.
The sexuality is manifest. But it is only our defensive habit of compartmentalizing the various acts of war that makes us unaware that war, too, involves these elements, especially ritualized sexual abuse. Even if we think of it as only incidental or collateral damage, like all civilian slaughter, this sexual assault occurs because men are turned on by torturing and killing for some reason. Violence is kind of an aphrodisiac. Prostitutes used to hang around the Colosseum in Rome to service the sexually aroused men after they finished watching the slaughter. That's just history for you. In the past, according to the world's leading historian of war, the opportunity to engage in wholesale sexual assault was not just among the rewards of successful war, but from the soldier's point of view, one of the actual cardinal objectives for which he fought. This is how entire civilizations would just go completely missing upon being conquered, how everything about them, their culture and their people would change is because of this rebirth act, this sexual assault and subsequent rebirth that came as a result of it. So men who didn't engage in this stuff during war were suspected of being homosexuals. In earlier wars, just as with cults, the killing of children was often preceded by sexually abusing them. Virgins, of course, were the favorite group. Those targets were the favorite targets for invading armies until well into the Middle Ages. Now, I admit that it is hard to accept the conclusion of this line of thought and admit that those who watch bodies of people killed in wars pile up on TV are participating in any kind of ritual rejuvenation of their potency. But in my opinion, it's only hard to accept until we recall that before the Gulf War, most of the country felt that the American dream was actually withering and that our leader was a wimp. And after the war, after killing 300,000 Iraqis, mostly children, these same people felt that the country was strong again. The stock market came back and our leader ended up being approved by like 91% of the country. It seems to me that during the war, we absorbed the vitality of those that we slaughtered. Slain warriors in earlier culture also often were using war to internalize their strengths. Perverted, we all are when we choose to engage in war. Only our rationalizations prevent us from seeing this. So, when you think about it from this perspective, when you think about everything that I just said, which I realize is a lot, maybe your head is spinning. My head is spinning. But when you think about all of this, what you're really getting is the understanding that what these leaders do when they engage in these satanic...
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Horrible, heinous acts, as we read about in the Epstein files. What they are doing is they are engaging in magic and rituals that symbolize something greater, such as an entire war, an entire country coming into coming unto death and then going through rebirth. And they're also doing it on a personal level that brings them satisfaction, that brings them more potency, that makes them feel more powerful, that desensitizes them and enables them to commit more atrocious acts for their country. It's not just evil thoughts, like I have an evil thought, so I'm going to do an evil thing. It is something that is demonically influenced, and not in the way that a regular sin is demonically influenced. It ensures the power of Satan. It ensures that his power grows. It expands his horizon through the sins of man, through the acts that these evil elites perform. Because as they become more evil, he becomes more powerful. And by engaging in these occult actions upon children, they are engaging in potentially, and if you're reading these emails, some of the most evil acts that can be imagined. By doing so, by pushing themselves to the brink and going through a state of rebirth, a sort of recharge to their potency as human beings, as figures of leadership, as elites, they are able to utilize their enemy, or utilize their power, excuse me, to expand the devil's reach, Satan's reach. This is more than just a bunch of perverts. But regardless, this is why it's important for us to not engage in hate, because in a way, we then do the same exact thing. This is why it's important for us to not be hungry for war, because then we engage on a level that is similar. We engage in the activities on a level that is similar to these rituals as well. Because through us supporting them in their ventures, we support everything that they would do, everything that they would cause, the hundreds of thousands of deaths that they would cause. And it gives value and meaning to their rituals. If the people revolted and the people did not support their leadership, these rituals would essentially be meaningless. But because these rituals make them stronger, even if it's only in their own minds, because they do that, and we continue to vote for such people, or at a minimum, we don't drag them from their lofty seats down to our level, they continue to possess the power that it takes, the power that they need to cause horrible, horrible fates to befall the vulnerable, other countries, other peoples, and anybody who would ever be a victim. Anyway, I hope this didn't go over too many heads, and I hope it didn't disturb too many people. Sorry if it did. I was trying to speak fast because it's a lot of information. Thanks for listening. The life is in the blood.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.